You must tell me all your secrets. Remember, we must share everything together.
Sugar is sweet. Revenge is sweeter.
I'm passing sentence.
Meet Sugar Hill.
No, please.
Not a place, but a brand new face.
My friends call me Sugar.
The foxiest.
Looking for anything special?
Sexiest. Deadliest chicken town. The mob took Sugar's man away. And now, she's gonna make them pay.
I want them dead.
With a voodoo priestess called Mama Matrace.
I know what you can do. The power you possess.
How strong is your hate?
And Baron Samedi, too.
My particular special. A drink that I'm famous for. The zombie.
This is my domain! A kingdom of the dead!
And an army of undead behind her.
Each death has had something to do with voodoo ritual.
There's nothing that Sugar can't do.
Use it.
The mob has never seen anything like Sugar Hill and her zombie hitmen.
Hello again, and welcome back to Girls, Guts, and Giallo. And I'm here with Maria De Paola Vasquez, all the way from London. Hi, Maria.
Hi.
You're my first international podcast guest.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to be on the show. I've been a listener from the beginning. Yeah, I heard you on Attack of the Queer Wolf. I can't remember which episode that was, but I was like, I like the sound of her podcast. And then I hit the subscribe button.
Amazing. So. Love that. So we're going to talk today about the American horror blaxploitation zombie film from 1974, Sugar Hill. And Maria, before we talk about the film, I wanted to ask you who you are, what you're about, and also, well, let's get to that afterwards. Who are you?
I'm originally from Long Island.
But cool.
I moved to London just over 18 years ago. I'm a photographer, a longtime horror fan, and I am also a volunteer film programmer at Deptford Cinema, which is a volunteer-run cinema in Deptford, Southeast London. So yeah, that's me.
That Deptford sounds so fucking cool. What kind of film screenings do y'all do?
I mean, everything, you know, not just horror, but we have like live music, you know, comedy. It's, I mean, some people have said it's quite, you know, like niche and arty farty, but like the programming is all done by volunteers. So it's, you know, we've had a John Wick all nighter. We've, you know, it spans the spectrum of film taste. So there's something for everybody there.
That's great. It's always good to hear that volunteer-run cinemas are still alive and well and doing cool programming. So that's awesome. I hope to get there one day when I can leave my house.
That would be great. especially for like something horror related, because I was hoping to do something again in October with Final Girls Berlin Film Festival, and screening some of the stuff from their 2020 edition. So hopefully we'll be allowed out in October.
Yes. Yeah. Final Girls Film Festival is also amazing. If you're listening and you haven't heard of them before, definitely check them out too. So Sugar Hill, I know like a while ago, like months ago, I posted screenshots from the movie and was, you know, saying that I really wanted someone to do this with me, and you had volunteered, and now it's finally coming to fruition. Yeah. But I know that you have a special connection to this movie, and I was wondering why you wanted to do this film and what your connection and history with this movie is.
So, I mean, like, it kind of all started when I first discovered horror, which was when, you know, Blockbuster was still around. And I remember on the first day, like, my parents went down to Blockbuster to get a card, and my mom let me loose in the horror section. But she said, you have to find me a film, you know, like an action film, because she was really into, like, kung fu and action films. And I was just tired of her taste in Chuck Norris films. And I wandered through and found the blaxploitation section. And just to give some people a bit of context, like, I'm mixed race. My mother's Afro-Brazilian and my dad's white Spanish. So I instantly was like, oh my God, there's like loads of films, action films, cheesy 70s stuff, like black people in it. Because I was about eight or nine, when we finally got a VCR and everything. And then actually the first blaxploitation film that I watched was Coffee.
Love Coffee. Because
I just liked the look of the cover, and I was just like, oh, you know, she's a black lady, she kicks ass, she's got big tits. That kind of described my mother. So I thought she might. And like, you know, and yeah, like, luckily she liked my choice in film. And then eventually on my subsequent trips to Blockbuster, she always like monitored what types of horror I could bring into the house. Like, I couldn't bring in anything involving, because I was raised Catholic. So I couldn't bring in anything involving the occult. And we had seen like Blackula, but I was like really interested in this idea of like this amazing woman, you know, raising a voodoo army of zombies to avenge her lover's death. So I just waited till my dad took me to Blockbuster, because he never gave a shit about what I watched. So. And then I just snuck that past the censor, i.e. my mother. And I just thought it was amazing. And yeah, like, I just liked how, like, she won in the end.
Yes, totally. Yeah, I mean, this film is an iconic blaxploitation heroine film, like Coffee or Foxy Brown.
Yeah.
And it follows a lot of the same arc as those films do, but yeah. The interesting thing about this film is it's also horror, so yeah. it's kind of a hybrid genre. So it was directed by Paul Maslansky, and who is best known for the Police Academy movies, actually, and starring Marky Bay as the title character. And the basic plot is that she uses voodoo to get revenge on the people responsible for her boyfriend's death. So this movie was made by American International Pictures, and they had previously combined horror and blaxploitation genres, like with the film Blackula from 1972 and its sequel Scream, Blackula Scream. So blaxploitation horror is a... of a great subgenre. There's not a ton of films in the subgenre, but I was wondering, this is definitely not my, even though I love these films, definitely not my area of quote unquote study. So I was wondering if you could speak more to the blaxploitation horror subgenre, and like what are some films in that subgenre, and what are some of the just anything you wanted to say about it.
Well, I know that another blaxploitation film, actually, which I only discovered a couple weeks ago, was one called Abby.
Oh yeah,
which Abby. So yeah, like, and how I found it quite interesting because it was after I'd watched Sugar Hill for the second time to take notes. I watched Abby, and I found it really interesting how that kind of delved into the whole, you know, the African gods, and like, because growing up Catholic, but obviously coming from this like Afro-Latino like background, this idea of like, you know, the African religion that the slaves brought over to Brazil, that it always seems kind of, to my very Catholic family, a bit like scary and like, ooh, you know, but I, for me, like, the more forbidden they made it seem, the more curious it made me about like exploring its origins. And yeah, like, I mean, there aren't, to be honest with you, I don't know of that many other sort of blaxploitation horror films apart from the ones we've named so far.
Yeah, there's not a lot. Yeah,
male-led ones, you know.
Yeah, and well, what you were saying about these, that the subgenre having elements of African spirituality is definitely the thing that stands out and is present in all of the blaxploitation horror films that we mentioned. There is a, that is always the origin of the supernatural elements in it, is this African spirituality, you know, combined with the very 70s American Black Power sensibility. Yeah. And of course, it's complicated because a lot of the people that were writing and directing these films were white. Like Paul Maslansky is a white man.
Yeah.
And that has led, and like I talked about this with my friend Kat when we did the Foxy Brown episode, a lot that has led to, you know, a lot of the scholarship about these films, sort of kind of like how the lesbian vampire films get positioned as like, you know, being exploitation films, right? Like that's why we get the name blaxploitation, is because there is an element of identity that is being exploited. You know, and so that complicates it because it's always this like a white person's interpretation of the Black Power movement. And, you know, it gets complicated because like you, and I know I keep saying the word complicated over and over, because like you said, right, this was something that you connected to as a kid, and we're not used to seeing Black women as heroines in horror films.
Yeah.
So while it's, you know, has this kind of dubious history, at the same time, like people do feel a very real connection to these roles. And that's also, that's important. So this is the role Marky Bay is most known for. She retired from acting in the 80s. And fun fact, she is an avid stamp collector. I thought that was really cute.
I also read somewhere that apparently her and her husband do like murder mystery tours.
That's so cool. Love that.
In California. So
yeah.
If I ever make it out to the West Coast, I definitely, I want to seek her out and go on a murder mystery tour.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I just moved to California. So if you ever visit, we'll seek out Marky Bay and go on her murder tour. That sounds ideal. Don Pedro Coley plays Baron Samedi. Mm-hmm. He's great in this.
Yeah.
And he is an actor who appeared in many blaxploitation films of this era. That was the kind of the other thing about blaxploitation is it gave a lot of roles to people who, you know, to black actors who were being historically denied roles. So it gave a lot of roles to these great actors, and we get these great personalities of the era. And then when blaxploitation falls out of favor, a lot of these actors aren't able to keep up that momentum, and they kind of fall out of work.
Yeah.
So that's the other complicated thing about it, is it also employed a lot of great actors. And like also Zara Colley, who plays Mama Matrice, who's also fantastic in this film. And she's most known for her role as Mama Jefferson on The Jeffersons.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw this film, I was like, Mama Jefferson. God, like,
well, that's the other thing, too, is like somebody like Zara Colley, who's an older black actress, is very often pigeonholed into these kind of mammy-esque characters, whereas in this movie she gets to be a badass fucking witch.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you get to see different sides of her. I mean, she's like her and, I mean, everybody's great in this movie, but like her and Baron Samedi, I think, are my favorites. So yeah, there's not a ton out there about the actual production of this film. I was struggling to find some things. Something that is interesting that I think a lot of people don't know about American blaxploitation, and I don't know if you've heard this before, is that with the release of The Exorcist, blaxploitation started to decline. Because what happened was The Exorcist was... white Hollywood executives thought that black viewers were not interested in horror.
Okay.
And they would specifically release horror films in neighborhoods that were predominantly white because they believed that black viewers were not interested. So they released The Exorcist in predominantly white neighborhoods in California. But they saw that black viewers were traveling from other neighborhoods to go see this movie. So they were like, oh, actually black viewers do like horror films, so I guess we don't have to make blaxploitation films anymore. So The Exorcist is kind of the reason that blaxploitation started to fall out of production. Which I had no idea until I researched The Exorcist.
Yeah. So it turns out that The Exorcist is also to blame for why, like, the film Abby got pulled from theaters after, like, a month. Because, yeah, I guess the producers claimed it was basically, like, a copy of The Exorcist. And I can tell you, it definitely is not.
No, it's not.
I mean, it involves a possession of a woman, and that's where the similarities end. I don't think that film is out like on DVD anywhere. I saw it on YouTube.
Yeah, so. Abby is, yeah, I mean, that's a great comparison too, and I really want to do Abby on the podcast. I might do it with Monica Estrella Negra, who was on here recently. But yeah, there really is no similarities except that it's about a possessed woman. There's a ton of movies that are about a possessed woman. Yeah. So it had the misfortune of coming out at the same time. And mm-hmm. The Exorcist sort of like eclipsed so many other things. It was just such a huge phenomenon. So let's talk about the plot of Sugar Hill.
Okay.
So we open and there's that great intro song. That's the other thing about blaxploitation films is they always have a great theme song that sets the tone of the film. And we see a group of people dancing and performing what looks to be some kind of ritual.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about that is once the opening song ends, the camera pulls back and it's revealed that this is an act being put on at a resort. This resort is called Club Haiti.
Yeah.
And
I basically was like, oh, like another performance of Black spirituality for the white man. Like,
yeah.
Obviously as a kid, when I saw it, I didn't really make the connection, and it was only when I saw it again, like, you know, more than 30 years later, I was like, oh, like, this is what my mother told me about, you know, the performativeness of African spirituality, and how, like, I think another reason why she didn't like seeing it on screen is because most of the time it was written from a white perspective as a sort of caricature.
Oh, absolutely. And this movie kind of nods to that. It's like a very clever opening, because when it opens, you are sort of thrust into this and like ready to go along for the journey. But then when it pulls back and you see this group of white people clapping and the performers ending their show, I mean, it's very kind of smart, because you're like, wow, you're immediately kind of put in the position of those viewers who were just clapping. So we pan to Sugar, mm-hmm. Marky Bay, looking gorgeous in this green outfit.
Yeah.
Her clothes are everything in this. That's the other thing I love about blaxploitation heroine films, is like the fucking clothes is just always amazing. And she's like sipping a drink. She's approached – everybody's clothes in this are amazing. She's approached by a man in this like glittery suit. With these like this like scalloped lapel. Yeah. It's so good. And this is her boyfriend Langston. So the other interesting thing about this is Langston, Sugar's boyfriend, is a black man who owns Club Haiti. So he is like sort of capitalizing on this and selling it to a white audience. So this is another common blaxploitation trope of the boyfriend who gets killed, and then the heroine has to avenge him. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about this. It kind of annoys me a little bit, because I think that like films like Coffee and Foxy Brown and Sugar Hill have a very classical revenge arc, like a lot of exploitation films do. But when there's a white woman taking revenge, she's taking revenge for herself. Whereas like in a rape revenge film, like I Spit on Your Grave or Miss 45, whereas in these films, it's always the black woman taking revenge for a man. Like it's never her own, it's not her own pain, it's not her own vengeance.
I mean, it kind of follows the whole idea of, you know, black women constantly coming to the rescue of other people. I definitely saw that sort of within, you know, my mother, and how, this idea, like, black women having to bear the burden of whoever, like, you know, basically bearing the world. Bearing the weight of the world on their shoulders.
Right. And these films play into that for sure.
Yeah.
So Now we meet Fabulous, the character Fabulous, who shows up, again, another amazing outfit. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like this crazy pattern. And
it's like a, I called it a polyester onesie.
Yeah, it's a onesie. Yeah, it's like a bell-bottomed onesie with like a matching jacket.
Yeah.
And he's there with this gang of white men.
Mm-hmm.
And they are bullying Langston because their boss wants to buy this club. And
yeah.
Langston basically tells him to shove it. And he kicks Fabulous out. And Sugar warns him to watch out for him. But Langston, of course, has a ton of hubris. And he doesn't listen.
Yeah.
Doesn't listen to his girlfriend. And he leaves the club and he's attacked by Fabulous and his thugs. So then this white guy pulls up in a car. He's obviously the head boss. This is Morgan, played by Robert Quarry, who was also a very prominent horror film actor at the time.
Yeah.
And he tells the gang to leave Langston's body for dead. So Sugar finds Langston. And she cries and begs for him not to die. But of course, he is dead and beaten to death, which seems like it would be hard to do. It's pretty brutal.
I mean, I remember watching it thinking that's got to be the most gentle ass kicking I've ever seen.
Like, yeah.
Like, I guess they couldn't pay for a stunt double.
But, that's a good point. Yeah. They were like, please don't actually hurt him. We can't get a stunt double in here.
I'd written in my notes, say, like, the Morgan has this line where, oh, he's just garbage.
Yeah.
Leave it there. Like, just leave it. And I just wrote, this has got me feeling all sorts of sad and angry because, like, you know, when you think about it, oh, you know, like people, the way that like the black body is treated. I mean, obviously people still think that and speak those words to like till this day. But yeah, I just kind of like, I don't know, like that line upset me more than like them dropping the N-word.
Yes. Yeah, it's really, I'm glad you mentioned that. And by the way, just as an aside that I'll edit out, yeah. Definitely feel free to, I love when you interrupt me with insights, like, because yeah. I just keep talking so to keep going through the plot. So definitely feel free to add anything like insights like that I've forgotten to talk about. Yeah, that's a really, really good thing to point out because that is a really upsetting part. And yeah. You see it immediately positions Robert Quarry Morgan as this ultimate villain. And this is the other thing about blaxploitation films that, and part of what I love, not just about blaxploitation, but about exploitation films in general, is it's not afraid to show people the absolute villainy of people.
Yeah.
Like there's like in rape revenge films, there's no like, oh, let's sympathize with these rapists. Let, you know, they can be redeemed. Like it's the same in blaxploitation film. There's no sympathizing with the racists in these yeah. films, which is refreshing because there is like this very neoliberal sensibility that we all get shoved down our throat of like, oh, you know, can we all just get along? Like try to see things from other people's perspective when these people are literally like violent and like trying to kill us.
Yeah, like wow, fuck them. Like.
Yeah, exactly. So this, it's kind of it's I think part of why exploitation films are still popular with people,
yeah.
even though they don't really get made anymore, is like this. It's cathartic. Like you don't have to sympathize with these people; they're just absolute villains. And this guy Morgan is, yeah, just immediately positioned as just like a piece of shit. The way that he talks about Langston's body, so back in Morgan's lair. They talk about how Langston had to die. So all of the thugs in Morgan's lair, including his girlfriend, are white except for Fabulous.
Yeah.
And Fabulous sort of allows, or doesn't allow, but puts up with the white villains referring to him with racial slurs, talking down to him. He just kind of laughs it off. And it's really painful to watch. And I was wondering what you thought of his character.
I mean, I know initially when, like, his intro, when he walks into the club, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, like, he's the token one. Like, you know, the kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, it's that one black guy who is okay with, like, you know, I mean, if you had to think of a modern day equivalent, with his white friends, you know, like dropping the N-word and kind, you know. And it's just like, I felt sorry for him, but at the same time I was kind of like, well, you know, you've made your bed.
I think that that's how you're supposed to feel. And this is another very common character in blaxploitation films, is of the crime committing black man who is kind of, who is like a quote unquote traitor, who gets lumped in with the villains. This is also the case in Foxy Brown with her brother. There's threads of things that you can track in all of these films. We also learned that Langston gave Sugar her nickname.
Yeah.
And that her name is Diana Hill. And Sugar meets up with Lieutenant Valentine, and who is her ex-boyfriend. And she, you know, he's investigating the death.
Yeah.
And she wants these men to pay. She wants revenge. And she says she'd kill them if she could. Dun, dun, dun.
Can I just interrupt with a bit about Richard Dawson, who plays Valentine?
Yes, absolutely.
First of all, I made a note that, like, I noticed his burgundy suit almost matches the carpet and the tablecloth.
Amazing.
At that restaurant.
We love it.
but that, so yeah, he was also in another blaxploitation horror flick, which was Scream, Blackula Scream. And he's got another vampire connection in that his daughter Bianca Lawson played Kendra, the vampire slayer, on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh my god! Wow, thank you for that. I had no idea. Love Kendra. And
another random fact, he was also on All My Children during the same year Sarah Michelle Gellar was on there.
Wow.
Before she played Buffy.
Oh my god, so many connections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's Beyonce and Solange's stepdad, because he's married to Taylor.
Because he's married to who?
He's married to Beyonce and Solange's mother.
Oh,
so
my god.
He's their stepdad. Yeah.
Wow. Wow, I had no idea. Thank you. So Sugar visits Mama Maitresse, who lives in this, like, very spooky, creaky house with, like, snakes and shit everywhere.
Yeah.
She is a voodoo queen. And this is when we meet Zara Cully as Mama Maitresse. And could you describe Mama Maitresse for me?
She's, like, this little petite... I don't know. She's got this long sort of gray, like, afro hair, and she's just like this tiny little, I don't want to say goblin, I've got to think of a nicer word. She's just like this tiny little, like, woman. Just, she appears out of nowhere. And she's just in this black sort of, you know, very Victorian-like dress.
Right.
And yeah, like, I mean, to me, she'll always be Mama Jefferson.
Right. Yeah, you're right. She just like appears.
Yeah, I just can't describe her any other way apart from that because I grew up watching the Jeffersons. But yeah, she just, it seems like she just materializes out of thin air.
So, yeah, and she speaks about things very cryptically and she can sort of like read people's energy. And Sugar asks Mama Maitress for help getting revenge on Langston's killer. And interestingly, Mama Maitress is confused because she says Sugar was always a disbeliever. So they're related in some way.
Yeah.
And but she helps her. And I love this line where she says, "How strong is your hate?" And Sugar says, "As strong as my love was, my hate is stronger."
That is so like, oh, yes.
So I'm good. Ready
to see what damage she can do.
Exactly. I'm like, all right. I love a good revenge.
Yeah.
So Mama performs this ritual with Sugar where she takes Sugar to a swamp with alligators. So the other interesting thing about this film is that it was shot in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And it takes place in Houston, Texas. There's these beautiful shots and of nature. And what I like about this film that's unique is it's got this like soft filter.
Yeah.
Where everything is sort of like lightly out of focus. And it gives it this very like supernatural quality.
Mm-hmm.
Mama instructs Sugar to kneel as she summons Baron Samedi, who's the Lord of the Dead. And Baron Samedi appears. We also have to describe him because he just looks great. He's like, he's got these gold teeth. He's got what you would think of as a very like stereotypical voodoo priest outfit on. And
I kind of like in my notes, I kind of described it as like sort of more steampunk.
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
For sure, yeah.
Just with the top hat and the cane and everything. And you know, the sort of the smudged eyeliner look that he's got going on and everything.
He looks fucking great.
Yeah.
He is just like immediately a powerhouse. And he is like very boisterous and like loves to laugh, loves to cackle. And Sugar asks him for the power to destroy her enemies. He is also flanked by his sexy zombie brides.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, I'm fascinated by like how they did those silver eyeballs.
Yes.
And like, you know, like, oh my God, that like, it looks like it was painfully like just glued on or something. I'm like, could they even see? But it like, I just like the look, the whole look of the zombie army, because it's not what you...
Zombies. Yeah. It's not what you typically think of. So,
yeah.
Right? Like, this is when we meet the zombie army. Also, Mama Maitress says that Baron Samedi is a great lover, and she laughs as if she like knows that firsthand, which I like to think she does. And Sugar offers her soul in return for his help, and he laughs because he's not interested in souls. But impressed by her, and maybe hoping that she will be one of his new zombie brides, he summons his army of the dead, and we get this amazing sequence of the zombies popping out of the ground, set to this like great music. And the zombies are kind of beautiful, like in this very gothic way. Like they're not, like you said, right? They have those silver eyes.
Because I noticed as well that like they've still got the shackles on, because they, I think Mama Maitress mentioned that like that graveyard they're basically like the bodies of slaves that died on their way over. And yeah, they were buried there, still in their shackles, which is quite like, I don't know, for me, it's just like, wow. It's almost like they were just kind of dumped there.
Yes. Yeah. So the in the lore of this movie is that the Army of the Dead are enslaved people who were brought over from Guinea. And right, they died on the way there of fever, and their bodies were dumped in the swamp still with the shackles on. So this is the army. This is Baron Samdi's Army of the Dead. And they're very different than like a George Romero zombie, right? Like there's the way that we like voodoo resurrected zombies in films are very different than contagion zombies. In that they're controlled by a supernatural element. Contagion zombies are not controlled by anything. They're like feral. They just, you know, they're undead because of a disease. Whereas these zombies, there's like a spiritual religious element to it. And voodoo zombies are typically not like rotted and grotesque in the same way that contagion zombies are, right? Like the zombies in this are kind of like hauntingly beautiful. Go ahead.
I was gonna say they still have some sort of humanity to them.
Yes. No, that is exactly it. That's really poignant, because that is, I believe, very intentional, because these zombies are, there is huge historical weight to the reason that they are who they are. And I believe that this portrayal is it's properly weighted in that there's the zombies are not, you're rooting for them, right? Like they're not scary. Like whereas in contagion zombie films, like we're supposed to be terrified by it. Like in this film, I feel like we are on the side of the Army of the Dead and Sugar and Baron Samdi and Mama Maitress, which is very unique for zombie films. So, okay. Sugar zeroes in on her first kill, which is one of the goons' tank. And this is when the film starts to follow a very typical revenge arc where, like, each person in this group gets taken out. And he's in charge of a group of men at a shipping dock. And we also see that not only is he a racist goon when he's with Morgan, he's also a racist piece of shit as a boss.
Yeah. Because he's basically shaking down these guys, like, you know, for money in order for them to get any shifts, which, I mean, probably nothing's changed today.
Right. I'm sure that happens. Like, one of the men stands up to him and says, "I'm not going to pay for my job," a black man, and he punches him in the face. And so we're like, this positions us as the audience to be like really ready for this guy to die. And go ahead.
Sorry. I was also going to say, I noticed that like when he approaches like the group of black guys on the docks, he offers them work on like on a banana. God, I can't even read my handwriting. On like basically on a boat that's like a banana container. And I was just like, was that deliberate? And I was just like, oh, you know.
Absolutely was. Yeah. It's, you know, he's just awful.
Yeah.
Sugar confronts him in this like abandoned warehouse kind of thing. And she now has on her kill outfit.
Yes.
Can you describe her kill outfit?
So it's like a one piece like white jumpsuit with a very deep V-neck to show off the goods.
Yes.
And it's got like a red lapel, and I think the cuffs as well, like, are kind of turned over, and it's got like a red lining and everything. But yeah, that is her, that's her killing outfit, which yeah. stays impeccably clean.
Yes.
Throughout the entire time, not yeah. a speck of dirt.
Yeah, and she wears this whenever she kills, and she also, very importantly, also has an afro.
Yeah.
And she, when she is not killing, she has straight hair.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was very important, because it positions her very much as this Black power heroine.
Yeah.
And this is also something that's super common in movies like Coffee and Foxy Brown, where when the women are like embodying this kind of self-actualized version of themselves, their hair is in an afro.
Yeah.
And when they're having to code switch and like move more seamlessly in a white society, they have straight hair.
Yeah.
So the army of the dead descend on him and murder him. And it's very satisfying. And Lieutenant Valentine investigates the murder scene, and he's very puzzled by it. We see the tank was brutally decapitated as well. Some yeah. good gore there. And back at the lair, Morgan's men are all spooked. Morgan has this girlfriend who's this horrible woman named Celeste.
The first time she makes an appearance, once I also noticed that she drops the most N-words.
Oh, yeah.
Ironically enough, in the film. And then part of me was thinking, oh, is she a Becky or a Karen? And then I was just like, nah, she's too old to be a Becky. She's definitely a Karen.
Oh, definitely.
And then throughout my notes, I just call her Karen.
Yeah, this movie made me also want to use Celeste as a... She's a Celeste. She's so... this is another thing that's very common in blaxploitation films that is also like true to life, is she's yeah. extremely jealous of Sugar, and that is a huge part of her hatred to her. Like, she is a violent racist, and she's jealous of what she perceives to be a sexual threat. So Valentine brings an object that was left at the scene to a forensics person who confirms that they are slave shackles and that kids find them a lot in the swamps, which was very unsettling to hear.
Yeah.
And he's more concerned with the mold and dead skin that he found on Tank's neck.
Which came from a non-living person.
Right. Completely dead tissue. So Sugar goes to Morgan's lair and pretends to be friendly, like she's going to sell him the club.
Yeah.
Celeste is obviously racist again. It refuses to get Sugar a drink.
Yeah.
And she tells Morgan that Langston left Club Haiti to her. And Morgan tries to get her to sell him the club by belittling her. Sugar leaves. Morgan says she is foxy and he's like into her. And Celeste is super jealous. So,
and drops another N-bomb.
And drops more N-words, yes. And Celeste... I was also like, you know, when you're watching a movie and like a white person is just like a little too comfortable saying the N-word. I was like, like she's saying this a lot.
Yeah.
And Celeste storms into Club Haiti and she tries to intimidate Sugar, who isn't fazed. But when Celeste calls her the N-word again, Sugar slaps her in the face and they fight. And Sugar kicks her ass.
I know.
Like,
I mean, can I just say, like, can I just quote, like, just like one line? Like, so I wrote, how many times has a black person, especially black women, heard this before? But Celeste says to Sugar, don't you get uppity with me? And then Sugar comes back with uppity with you, my dear. Talking to you means I look nowhere but down. And I was just like,
that is that. So good. And it also shows that she doesn't have to use low. She doesn't have to refer to Celeste with like cuss words and slurs.
Yeah.
Like she can take her down with her cutting wit, and Celeste is just kind of relegated to like she just sucks, like she's stupid, she has nothing to say but like the lowest possible things that you could say to someone.
Yeah.
So Baron Samedi, we get the first time that he disguises himself. He starts to help Sugar more, and he starts to disguise himself as like working class people to lure these goons to their death. And he like code switches, like he pretends to speak in a completely different way than he actually does, so that the goons, you know, see him a certain way and see him as kind of servile, and follow him. So he lures this other goon, O'Brien, to his death. So he leads him out into this empty field. And there's also this great moment where O'Brien turns around to say something to Baron Samedi, but he's turned into a scarecrow.
Yeah.
Like, bye. And
I'm out.
The living dead. I'm out. The living dead sneak up on him and bring him to Sugar, who's again wearing her kill outfit. And she's also holding this shackle.
Yeah.
And is she controlling the dead with this shackle, or is she like just kind of brandishing it as kind of an intimidation thing?
So like, now that I think about it, I think she might be controlling them. Cause like when later on, when Valentine goes to the Museum of Voodoo, like, and he brings a shackle to that, professor guy, and he's saying how it's used as like, juju in voodoo.
Yes.
Like certain things like that. Like, now that you know, now that you mention it, she probably is using that as some way of controlling the zombie army,
right? Which is kind of feels very loaded for this character, this black woman, to be controlling the zombie army with this slave shackle. So this is, I think, maybe my favorite death. Because she has the dead feed O'Brien to this like passel of starving pigs. And she has the line where she says, I hope they're into white trash, which is great.
I also like the fact that like when the zombie army bring him over to like the pig pen, she's like, hello, honk. And I'm just like, remember me. I'm just like, oh my God, like these retro words for like.
Yes.
You know, instead of like honky, it was just honk. And I was just like, okay. But I love it.
And that's the other thing is like when she's in her kill outfit and she's, you know, murdering these goons, like she uses a lot of words like whitey and honky to like her rage is just like so pointed. And when she's in this kill mode, that's when she's really free to express this part of her. So Sugar is on her job as a fashion photographer. That's pretty fucking cool to see her doing that. Yeah. I love the parts where Sugar is actually like taking photos. And Valentine comes to visit her and he confesses he's still into her. Like, yeah, dude, we know. And he thinks Morgan's goons are being killed as an act of revenge. And Sugar corners another goon at a bar in her kill outfit. And he's so gross. He says, "You girls can't stay away from the white stuff." But her response is so funny because you can tell she like is trying, can't think of anything to say, or she just white is so much whiter. Like, she can't even bear to like fake compliment him. She's like, "Well, white is whiter. I don't know." So this goon Georgie, he's like the most disgusting to me because he's so easily seduced by Sugar. Mm-hmm. And the way that he manhandles her, I'm like, ugh, don't touch her. And she leads him to her place and he's like immediately spooked by the candles and the doll on display, and he slaps Sugar and demands to know who she's working for. So Baron Samedi appears and Georgie tries to shoot him, but it's of no use. And Sugar and Baron Samedi use voodoo to get Georgie to kill himself with a dagger. And it's so good. Like, the kills just start escalating. It's like this one, like, okay, now you're going to kill yourself. And Morgan, the next day, gets a mysterious package that has a human heart in it.
Okay. I couldn't tell what it was. I was like, is that a tongue or a penis?
I thought it looks crazy. Well, I'm like, assuming it's a heart because Celeste says it's a heart.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, I guess that means we're supposed to know that it's a heart. Okay. So Valentine goes to the Voodoo Museum and Research Library, which is actually in Texas, or was in Texas. The building is the Heights branch of the Houston Public Library. The building was constructed in 1925, and in real life the building is a registered historical landmark in the state of Texas. So I was unclear, to be honest, of if the Houston Public Library, the Heights branch of the Houston Public Library, if it actually has a Voodoo Museum and Research History Building, or if the building is just the historic, like the library is just the historical building. I couldn't get clarification on that. So if anybody who's listening is in Houston, Texas, tell me. Because I don't want to say anything wrong. So Valentine brings this white professor the shackle.
Yeah.
And the professor tells him that it comes from enslaved people who were brought over and buried in the swamp. And Valentine's reaction, I felt, was very poignant. Like, he shakes his head in, like, just pain and disgust for that history. And like you were saying, the professor says, "Oh, it would make a very powerful juju," which is a voodoo charm. And Valentine says he suspects the murderers are a voodoo ritual. So he's on to it. So Morgan is extremely spooked by the murders and he demands that Fabulous find information for him. Another goon, King, he tries to shake down this piano player in a bar, and he threatens him. But then Baron Samedi appears in the disguise of a bartender. And suddenly the dead appear smiling with these machetes, and it's really badass. Sugar appears in her kill outfit, and Sugar uses a razor on a voodoo doll to slash King's neck. Like, she slashes the voodoo doll's neck, and then his neck, like, bleeds spontaneously. And he dies.
Yay.
Yay.
Another one bites the dust.
Yes, another one bites the dust. It's so the kills are very satisfying.
Yeah.
Valentine questions the piano player. This was so funny to me, too. I was like, was the piano player just there the whole time that this thing happened? Because he says that the attackers looked like corpses. But he also, like, doesn't give anything else away. Like, if he were there, that would mean that he saw Sugar.
Yeah.
Right?
He probably doesn't believe, like, what he just saw. And right. So, it's like, and I get the feeling that the piano player obviously is quite a heavy drinker. So,
right.
You know, he's probably just like, I probably just imagined all of that, you know.
Right. Yeah. And that was interesting to me because I was like, oh, is he not saying anything? So the voodoo professor tells Valentine about Mama Maitresse, and Valentine starts to put more and more things together because he goes to Mama Maitresse's house, which is Sugar's family's house, and he now knows that they're related.
Yeah.
And he asks to see her. Baron Somdi appears disguised as a groundskeeper. Him and Sugar both pretend to find voodoo like silly and outrageous, but Valentine is not buying it.
Yeah.
I love this scene because Mama Maitresse appears and she puts her hands on Valentine's face and says, "This man is not a believer."
And just walks off.
And then just walks away. And Baron Somdi is like, "Don't follow her because you only see her when she wants to see you." And I was like, goals. Like,
yes.
Like, absolute goals. Morgan meets with Sugar under the pretense of buying the club. Morgan offers her money to buy the club, and Sugar agrees. He only offers her $10,000. I was like, even in 1974, come on.
That seems like nothing.
Yeah, that's nothing for a club. And he's very condescending. And I have a note here that it's going to be fun to watch him die.
Yes.
Because we know that's coming. And back at Morgan's lair, Morgan, Celeste, and Fabulous are there. And Fabulous kind of says that he's heard talk about voodoo killings. We get another goon death. A baker, he goes to Sugar's apartment to give her the $10,000.
Yeah.
I love this. He's spooked by a chicken leg. That, like, crawls up his body of its own will. And he hears these shackles jangling.
And then it's like they grab him and throw him into the, what was it, a coffin, like, full of snakes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they entomb him in this coffin with snakes. And Mama Maitresse is now at this killing because she hasn't heard the other ones, and she's like laughing. Sugar goes to Morgan and Fabulous and, you know, says that his man never showed. So she leads them to think that he ran off with the 10K.
Yeah. And meanwhile, it got buried with him.
It got buried with him. So it's like, that's kind of interesting too, because, like, they're like, this is dirty money. Like, we don't even want this. Like, bury it. Fucking bury it with him. And it really and they also say, like, money, that's all you care about, so you can take it with you. Here you go.
Yeah.
And I just love that because it also is in keeping in this film with, like, how objects and tangible things have spiritual significance. Like,
yeah,
they don't even want the money because it's tainted. It's, like, got bad energy. So Fabulous leaves to go find Baker, and Morgan kind of creepily beckons Sugar to sit next to him, and he starts, like, stroking her, but then he threatens her and kind of strangles her a little bit and pushes her away.
Yeah.
I hate him.
Yeah.
Sugar pays off this sex worker, Opal, who sees Fabulous at a massage parlor every Thursday. This might be my favorite. Maybe the pigs. I think this is my I prefer this death over the pigs.
Okay.
Even. I know it's just, like, very funny the way that it plays out. And so Fabulous shows up for his appointment, and Baron Samedi is there as the desk clerk, and he tells Fabulous he's going to be seeing someone else today. So as Fabulous is like face down and naked, Sugar enters from behind and pretends to be a massage girl, and she starts rubbing him. And Sugar asks Fabulous if he'd like multiple women to work on him. And he, like, of course, agrees, thinking he's extremely lucky. And we get this great close-up of Fabulous where he's like, where are you? Like, come on, I'm getting lonely. And then we see the hands of the dead.
Yeah, and it's the zombie bride's turn to, like...
It's the zombie bride's like stroking him.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, why are your hands so cold?
Yeah. And he's like, stop it. Be gentle with me. And when he turns over, there's this great shot of the zombie bride like descending on him from above. It's such an iconic shot. And Sugar, so that's how he dies.
Yeah.
By Fabulous.
By Fabulous.
So Sugar asks Baron Samedi to use a voodoo doll on Valentine because he is on to them. So she wants to take him out, but she doesn't want to kill him and she doesn't want him to have any pain. So Baron Samedi sticks a pin in the doll's leg, which causes him to fall down the stairs and break his leg and takes him out of commission. So Sugar visits Valentine in the hospital. And he is definitely still on to her. Sugar calls Morgan to lure him to her turf. And now we get Morgan's epic death scene where he pulls up with Celeste to Mama Maitress's house. Celeste is too scared to go inside. Morgan goes inside and is attacked by the dead. And Celeste is attacked by the dead in the car.
Yeah, by the zombie brides.
By the zombie brides. Very poetic that Celeste is specifically attacked not just by the dead enslaved people, but by Black women.
Yeah.
Which is like her biggest fear.
Yeah.
And Morgan sees all his dead goons sitting around a table with Sugar at the head, and which is so delicious. Like, ooh, you know, like I control them now. And he jumps through a window to get away and runs, but Sugar and the dead find him and surround him with their torches.
Yeah.
Morgan tries to run, but he falls over the ledge into this like sludgy swamp. What is up with that swamp?
I don't know. Like, it's not quicksand. I don't know what it is, but
is it, like, is it supposed to be like the decomposed bodies of the enslaved?
I don't know. I mean, it just seems like some sort of weird boggy.
It's like this haunted like, bog. Yeah.
Yeah.
That like pulls him under and he screams and drowns to death. And yay. Also in the terrible review I read, the writer was like, oh, the killings are so cold that by the end you're sort of like rooting for the villain, the white villains. And I was like, no, you're not. Like, who would be rooting for these people? Like, I am so happy when they all die. And
I mean, I don't like, yeah, it sounds about white, like, with that review. I mean, just...
Yeah, like, where exactly? Who? And Baron Samedi laughs and praises Sugar on her revenge, and he's like, well, you know, it's over. You know, how are you going to pay me? And Sugar uses the still-alive Celeste as the price for their bargain. So he's going to make her a zombie bride. And he's like, I would prefer you, but I'll take her. And he gives her to Baron Samedi. And he carries her away. And it's great. He, like, carries her away into the beyond, which is this, like, purple, light, misty area.
Yeah.
And Sugar says, "It's over, Mama. You can rest now." And she looks off into the distance. And I was wondering, and this, the film ends, and I was wondering what you make of the way that Sugar looks off at the into the distance at the end. How do you read her expression there?
I think, like, I mean, I kind of read it as her just being like relieved, like, you know, it's finally over.
Right.
And she got exactly what she wanted, which was, you know, to avenge her boyfriend's death. Yeah, like, I don't know, I felt it quite abrupt, the ending, really. Like, I mean, but at the same time, it's like, after that, where else could you go with it? I think it's probably, like, the perfect, you know, like, her job is done, you know?
Right, yeah, it's very, very cathartic. It's just... I find it a very satisfying ending. I also like that it ends with the relationship between her and Mama Maitress, because I feel like that relationship is very interesting in the film. And I like that Mama Maitress stays a central character throughout, as opposed to just being like sort of the like spiritual harbinger that just kind of like pops in. And, you know, she's definitely part of this. So that is Sugar Hill. Where can people find you on social media if you want them to?
Right. So I've got a Twitter account, but I don't really use it that much. I prefer Instagram. I've got two accounts, which is, the first one is MDV_1405. And then I've got another Instagram account, which is MDV_photos. And then I kind of just wanted to let people know a bit more, if they want to know a bit more about Deptford Cinema. So the website's deptfordcinema.org. Obviously, we're closed down now because of the, you know, the coronavirus. But we've currently got a DC On Demand, which is a streaming service curated by the volunteers, where you can, for like £2, you can rent films, like indie films, student films, basically like that. It's content that's been curated by all the volunteers, because, you know, it's, we want to keep a connection with our with the people that come to the cinema, with the local community, and obviously, you know, the wider community, people who aren't based in London. And we're also, hopefully sometime in May, we'll be doing our own podcast, which will be like, I think each episode is going to be essentially run like how the cinema is run. It's going to be curated by a volunteer, and it's going to be basically open to anything related to cinema. I know the episode that I'm planning is definitely going to be related to horror. I'm working on that.
Awesome.
You can find Deptford Cinema on Twitter and on Instagram as well.
Amazing. And I'll link all of that in the show notes when this episode goes up. That's awesome. So you know where to find me. Girls Goes Giallo, Twitter and Instagram. Patreon.com/girlsgutsjallo. I'm doing live streams now. They're really fun. You know, for the price, less than the price of two movie tickets, you can watch me twice a month do some live commentary on some rare films that you might not otherwise have access to. So check that out. Patreon.com/girlsgutsjallo. And I will see you all next week. Celebrate the death.
to you. All I do is to put the food away. And evil never had a chance. She do voodoo, oh yeah. She do voodoo on you. She do voodoo, oh yeah. She do voodoo on you. Supernatural voodoo woman does the thing at night. Supernatural.
Supernatural.